Well, go ahead and take a seat, and welcome to Church Mercy Road. My name is Pastor Mike Lotzer. If I have not met you, thank you for visiting with us. We do believe that this is a unique family of Jesus followers, and if you're looking for a church home, this could be your home. We are in a series called Failing Forward, and the premise is pretty simple. How we respond to the failures in our life matters a lot, and if we fail in life, and we all will, and we define ourselves as a failure, and we get stuck in those failures, life isn't going to go so well. But if, when we fail, we're able to hand that failure over to God and say, teach me, Lord. Leverage this failure to do something good and true and beautiful. Would you do the impossible part while I do the possible part? Then we're failing forward. And so each week we're looking at a snapshot in the life of Moses. Moses was an incredible man. He was instrumental in completely being used by God to bring a people who were in captivity, literal slavery, out into freedom and into a promised land. But if you think Moses had a flawless life, you haven't read the biblical narrative about the life of Moses. He messed up a lot, just like you mess up a lot and I mess up a lot. And yet, every time he fails forward. Last week, we looked at the mother of Moses and how she had this child, baby Moses, born into a world broken by failures, specifically a failed policy that every Hebrew baby boy needed to die. She hid baby Moses for 3 months, then devised a plan to waterproof a basket and float this little baby in front of the daughter of the very dictator who was calling for the death of all these Hebrew baby boys. And in God's mercy, in miraculous power, Moses is not only saved, his mother is paid to nurse him, and Moses is adopted as a child of Pharaoh. He grows up in a palace. He's a prince. It's really an amazing story. And so we're told that even when it comes to bumping into the epic failures of other people, God can work with that, and God can do some beautiful things. Today, we look at perhaps Moses' biggest failure, at least tied between one other incident. It's nothing short than murder. In an impulsive moment, Moses murders someone. But first, I want to share a little story with you that I recently heard. It involves an art teacher. Any teachers in the room? All right, so this teacher must have been bored, wanted to do a research project. The ceramic teacher announced on opening day he was dividing the class into two groups. All those on the left side of the studio, he said, would be graded solely on the quantity of the work that they produced, how much pottery they would actually produce. All those on the right side, solely on the quality of the pottery they produced. His procedure was very simple. On the final day of class, he would bring in his bathroom scales and weigh the work of the quantity group. 50 pounds of pots rated an A, 40 pounds a B, and so on. Those being graded on quality, however, needed to produce only one pot, albeit a perfect piece of pottery, to get an A. Grading time came eventually, and a curious fact emerged. The works of highest quality were all produced by the group being graded for quantity. Not quality, quantity. It seems that while the quantity group was busily churning out piles of work and learning from their mistakes, their failures, the quality group had sat there theorizing about perfection and in the end had little more to show for their efforts than grandiose theories and a pile of dead clay. Isn't that how life works, Mercy Road? We learn by failing forward. We learn by making mistakes and taking risks and getting it wrong and then being humble enough to receive correction from God and other people. Each week we're looking at a specific type of failure that relates to all of us. And so today we're going to look at the failure of self-reliance. Self-reliance. The other night I got a text message from a young man I've been mentoring along with Jed and some other leaders at the church. We've all been mentoring Perry. Perry recently, last year, left for the U.S. Army to become a soldier. He went through basic training. He went through advanced individual training and jump school, and he surprised me by texting me, and he knocked on my door. He was all back, and it was just a fun time to embrace. And we got talking. What is Perry's job in the military as an 18-year-old soldier, he packs parachutes. Now, if you think about it, if your job is to pack a parachute for somebody else, and I'm the guy that's going to jump out of the plane and use that parachute, I kind of want you to be somewhat self-reliant, right? Like, I want you to have discipline and some drive and the ability to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Like, if you have the sniffles one day, I don't want you to just kind of shirk your responsibility and throw my pack together. But I don't want you to be too self-reliant, because I don't want you being so arrogant that you think you're the beginning and the end of parachute packing. In fact, I'd prefer, as is the case in the U.S. military, that when Perry packs a parachute, someone else would check his work, that he would rely on others. And I would even prefer that he rely on the power of God, because when people realize that they're not God, they tend to do better work. They rely on the grace of God, because after all, we have to jump out of that plane, and that parachute and how it's packed matters. So when it comes to self-reliance, church, self-reliance is not a bad thing. Nobody's going to organize your underwear drawer except for you, right? Hopefully. There's some things you need to rely on yourself for, but if you are overly self-reliant and you are not God-reliant and you are not reliant on others and you take matters into your own hands and it's all about you and you're the Lone Ranger, you will experience some epic failures, and Moses did. And he has some things to teach us. We are in Exodus chapter 2, right where we left off last week. We're in verse 11. I'm reading from the NIV translation. It should be on the screen as well behind me. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were, and he watched them at hard labor. This is interesting. The text suggests that he'd spent his upbringing in the palace. He probably knew about the suffering of his Hebrew people who were enslaved by Egypt, but it seems like he's seeing this for the first time now. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people, glancing this way and that and seeing no one. What did Moses do? He killed the Egyptian, and he hid him in the sand. He beat the guy to death, and he hides the body in the sand. The next day, Moses went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" The man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was what? He was afraid. Moses was afraid, and he thought, "What I did must have become known." When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. Capital punishment. You can't kill a guard in anger, even if you're a prince. But Moses fled from Pharaoh. He ran. And he went to live in Midian, which is a big word for the middle of nowhere in the ancient Near East, where he sat down by a well. Now, a priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. Some shepherds came along and drove them away. So they're getting harassed by male shepherds, presumably, and they're not allowed to water their flock and do what they're called to do. But Moses got up and he came to their rescue and watered their flock. So he saves the girls from the bullying of these shepherds. And then he does the heavy lifting for them and actually fills all their watering buckets. When the girls returned to Reuel, their father, dad asked the girls, "Why have you returned so early today?" Apparently, they have to deal with these shepherds on a daily basis. They answered, "An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds." Actually, a Hebrew, but if you walk like an Egyptian and talk like an Egyptian, you'll be mistaken for an Egyptian, right? "This Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock." This is not in the ancient world, in a patriarchal society, what men typically do. Women usually gather water. It's true in underdeveloped countries today. So he rescues them, and then he does their job for them. "And where is he?" Dad asks. He asked his daughters, "Why did you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat." In the Near Eastern ancient culture, and today, hospitality is a huge thing. If someone serves you like that, you're going to have them over. You're going to reward them, all of that. "Why did you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat." So presumably the girls go get Moses. Moses agreed to stay with the man who gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage. Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom. saying, I have become an alien in a foreign land. During that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and their cry for help was heard because of their slavery. Their cry went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant, his promise with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob, the patriarchs of the Hebrew people. So God looked on Israelites and was concerned about them. And then we jump into that section that's famous where Moses is a shepherd and he comes across a bush that is burning, but it's not being consumed. And God shows up in a powerful way to him and enlists him in the very mission that Moses always had an inkling he wanted to be a part of, to free his own people. And the rest, as they say, is history. And this is God's word. If you're taking notes, the first thing that I think we need to look at, and the second thing, is are the ingredients that make up any failure, all failures of self-reliance. In other words, if your mistake comes out of being too reliant on me, myself, and I, doing it the Lone Ranger way, thinking that you can handle it and you don't need other people and you don't need God, if that's the failure, there are some ingredients present. And we need to understand that Moses actually shows us what they are. The first one is ignorance. The failures of self-reliance involve ignorance. They always do. Did you catch Exodus 2:11? One day after Moses had grown, he went out to his people. The implication is clear. He knew up here about the suffering of his people, but he had never experienced it firsthand. And isn't that the way that the world works for us, right? We can hear about something, but until we see it, taste it, touch it, experience it firsthand, it doesn't move us like merely knowing about it. And oftentimes, we are sheltered about the complexity of sin and suffering and a problem. And because we are sheltered and ignorant to those complexities, we come up with very simplistic answers, very impulsive solutions that actually don't help but make the problem worse. And I would say impulsively killing a guard and hiding his body in the sand qualifies as an impulsive solution driven out of a place of ignorance. It's like he was moved out of his ignorance into knowledge of how bad this really is. And in a moment, he takes it out on this guard. The other place that we're seeing in the narrative is Exodus 2:13 when it comes to ignorance. Why are you abusing your fellow Hebrews? Okay, Moses clearly thinks that if we're an enslaved people group, we're all on the same team. And if we're on the same team, we're never going to have problems. We're never going to fight. Why were you abusing your fellow Israelites? This betrays in young Moses, Prince Moses, a sense of simplicity. He sees the world kind of in black and white. Hey, why are you abusing your fellow Israelite? What do you mean? You don't think we have interpersonal conflicts even when we're in slavery? Maybe you have looked back on your life, or you will today, and say, I remember the mistake I made, and it really came out of a place of ignorance. I just thought the world worked a certain way, and I came to learn it was much more complex than that. And you wish you could take that back, that decision, that investment, that action, that opinion. But now, in the rearview mirror of time, you see how ignorant you were. When we see other people like Moses making a mistake that is fueled by ignorance, it should give us pause, and it should help us to check in with God and say, God, what am I ignorant about right now in my life? What am I thinking wrongly about? What am I oversimplifying? What trite answers am I so sure will work with regard to this particular area of sin and suffering? Would you enlighten me, God? Would you humble me? And would you give me the discipline to maybe study, maybe observe, maybe wait before I act and look and analyze and say, whoa, there's more to the story here. So ignorance is a part of this cocktail of self-reliance, but the other ingredient would be arrogance. And these are twin sins in many ways, right? And now it's not always a sin to be ignorant. You got to learn, you got to grow up, but it always is to be arrogant. And we know this because universally across all human cultures, no one really finds pride that attractive. No one does. You don't. I don't. You don't like it in your spouse. You don't like it in your kids. and you don't like it in yourself. The failures of self-reliance involve arrogance, if you're taking notes. Exodus 2:12, seeing no one, Moses killed the Egyptian. Anytime you find a problem and you say, you know what, I'm going to take care of this, and I'm going to cut a corner because I'm going to do it in an unconventional, non-conventional way. And anytime you find yourself having to look to the right and look to the left to see if anyone's watching, you're probably verging on the thin ice of arrogant self-reliance. Because there's a reason you need to look to the right and the left. Because it's wrong. You justify, we justify, I justify, the ends justify the means. Look, this guy is suffering. I need to take care of this guard. Talk about arrogance. Look at this guard. He's hurting this guy. Look to the right, look to the left. Little clubbing, little burying. Moses is engaging in self-reliant behavior that is betrayed by his looking to the left, looking to the right, by his secretive, shortcutting behavior. Maybe you can look back on your life and say, aha, I was being self-reliant there because my action was preceded by looking to the left, looking to the right, making sure no one was there. I'm sure I'll get away with it. There is an arrogance in assuming you can always get away with it, right? And yet we see news story after news story of people who were so sure they could get away with it, that their action, even though it was a little illegal and wrong, was justified because their mission was so important. And then it comes to light that they didn't get away with it. He questioned the one in the wrong. Exodus 2:13. So he comes across after the murder and the burying. He comes across the next day, two Hebrews fighting. And the Hebrew text, the Old Testament is written in Hebrew. He questions the one in the wrong. There's one word for this in Hebrew, and it means something like the convicted or the accuser or the criminal. So now there's an irony in that, right? Moses just beat a guy to death and hit his body in the sand like at 5 p.m. yesterday. Now he's at like 9:30 a.m. the next day, and he's kind of strolling around, and he sees two slaves fighting, and he walks up, and he questions the one in the wrong, the criminal, literally translated. So it betrays an attitude that Moses has. Arrogance will do that. It will blind you to the fact that you're being criminal-like and give you the weird blind ability to not look at your own behavior but look at somebody else and say, ah, ha, ha, why are we fighting here? He's questioning the criminal. He's already made up in his mind, according to the narrative language here, that this guy's wrong, this guy's right. How dare you guys be fighting? That's beyond me. But now that I'm here, the Moses judge, I will adjudicate. I will settle matters. And the response is great, right? The guy just hits him right between the eyes. He's like, who made you judge and ruler? And the irony is thick because actually that's God's intent. God wants to make Moses judge and ruler of these people and pull them out of captivity, but it's going to be many more decades of failing forward before Moses is the type of man who is ready to be fully used to be a judge and a ruler. I guess you might put it this way. If you are too eager to be a judge and ruler, you might not make a good one. Moses is indulging in a failure of ignorance and arrogance, and it's all over the text. When these two come together, something happens. And if you're taking notes, it's our third point. Self-reliance makes us want to hide, and it makes us want to run. You see, if you're ignorant enough and you're arrogant enough and you act out of ignorance and arrogance, you will fail. You will. Not 100% of the time, but a pretty high percentage of the time. And when it happens, you will feel an impulse to bury your failure in the sand. If you wonder today if you're struggling with being overly self-reliant and not God-reliant or others-reliant, ask yourself this question. When you come up short, you make a mistake, you fail, do you have the temptation and the instant tendency to want to hide it in the sand? I've been there. There's no shame in that. But it's a diagnostic we need to ask ourselves. If your impulse, your knee-jerk instinct is to bury it in the sand, you're probably struggling with self-reliance. The New Testament says that if we confess our sin to God, he is faithful and just to forgive us. Do you know that? anything you've done, all you have to do is say, God, I'm sorry. Because of the death of Jesus Christ, would you forgive me? It's canceled. It's cleared. Anything. But it also says if you want to be healed of the chronic behavior of that sin, a tried and true method is to confess that sin to other believers, people you can trust, and have them pray for you. Scientists say it this way, you're only as sick as your secret. Some of us, we have been so busy hiding things in the sand that you're exhausted. You're tired because of all that sideways energy. What would it look like to not have to keep track of all the bodies hidden in the sand? You see, when you hide enough things in the sand, you become kind of a controlling, anxious person because it becomes very important who's walking where. Don't walk over that lump. There's nothing to see in there. Self-reliance will make you want to hide, and hiding is no way to live. Now, I think it may be God's mercy that we're not allowed to hide, usually, at least not forever, not for long. And so when the bodies come to light, when the failure comes to light, then our instinct goes from hiding to running, to fleeing, to running away from the consequences, oftentimes from the people we've hurt or the people we should be depending on and confessing. And some of you today, because of your tendency towards self-reliance, you're on the run, not literally, but emotionally. You're always retreating. You don't want people to get close because you're afraid that if they knew that, they wouldn't love you or they wouldn't accept you. Know whoever you are, whatever you've done, God sees you to the very bottom. He sees through every pile of sand, and he loves you to the skies. That's good news. And that means, by implication, whatever you share with us, we love you to the skies, too, here at Mercy Road. There is not one of us who has not failed in life in many ways. And we're all reliant on the grace of God through Jesus Christ. Self-reliance will make you want to hide and run from your failures. And Moses does this. Where does he go? He goes to Midian, and now he finds himself sitting by a well. And here's maybe the solution to all this, because right now the picture is bleak. Oh gosh, what an uplifting sermon. Thank you, Pastor Mike. We're all ignorant and arrogant, and the result is we hide and we run and we bury bodies in the sand, and then they're found out, and then we run, and then we're sitting by a well. Hold on. Fourthly, when my self-reliance is replaced by self-forgetfulness, I'm truly failing forward, and I'm now ready to serve God's plan. When my self-reliance is replaced, by self-forgetfulness. Now I'm learning to fail forward. Now you're learning to fail forward. You know, you can almost look at the type of Moses who beat the guard to death and buried his body in the sand, and then the Moses who rescued those girls at the well, and you can do a case study comparison and say, these are two different dudes. One of them was arrogant. And he was ignorant to complexities, and he kind of was looking for the credit, and he was trying to make it all happen himself. It's almost as if the old Moses, had he been driven to the well and he saw the shepherds abusing these women, he would have stepped in and rescued them. He probably would have beat them all to death and put their body in the sand. The text does not say that he did that. He just drives them away is what it says. But then it's like the old Moses would have done that for a leverage point. He would have been like the hero and say something like, well, ladies, now that I've rescued you, get busy filling up your water so I can go home with you and collect my reward. When you're on the run in an arid place like Midian, in a patriarchal tribal society, and you've been basically disowned from the palace and your whole country, your biggest priority is to find a new clan, a new tribe, and to start having kids. This is what mattered to ancient people groups. It's hard for Westerners in 2019 to understand that, but it was everything. So he would have wanted to find a wife and have a child, and a self-reliant Moses would have tried to make that all happen for himself, wouldn't he? But that's not the picture we're given here in Exodus chapter 2, is it? Instead, we're given a picture of a Moses who has been humbled by failure and who just sits at that well, and he looks up and he sees injustice and he takes care of it. He does the right thing, and then he doesn't try to leverage his good works towards a reward or to manipulate other people. He just keeps moving. And it surprises Raul, the father, when the girls get home. Hey, what did this guy do? He saved you, then he did all your hard labor for you, and you didn't bring him home to thank him? I mean, the surprise probably comes out of a place, and he didn't demand to be brought home and be thanked. And so they're like, yeah, that is kind of weird. Well, go get him. Now, father-in-laws or future father-in-laws are picky people. We don't like anybody dating our daughters, do we? Raise your hand if you've had any murderous thoughts while, be honest, come on, we're all failing for it. Not if you've committed murder, but if you've had murderous thoughts, just a moment, just a little one, when you've been vetting the guys who dated your daughter. Those guys who are not raising their hands either don't love their daughters or you're lying. Oh, there we have an honest guy and a licensed police officer. Here's the deal. I think Raul was just dumbfounded when he's like, what kind of guy rescues my seven daughters, does all their work for him, and doesn't take credit for it, and just keeps moving on? I'll say a self-forgetful man, not a self-reliant man. And when Moses is finally brought back home, I think that was the shortest engagement that ever existed. I think Raul said, Zephora, this guy is a guy worth marrying. Let's make this happen. A child is born. And now, ironically, Moses has the very thing that he probably needed and wanted most. Might we learn the lesson that if we give up our self-reliance, trying to do it all ourselves, and we just do the right thing, the little right thing that God wants us to do, and maybe even go above and beyond and go the extra mile, but then stop and not try to wonder who will reward us and how will God pay us back, maybe that is the moment when God will provide the very thing we have been striving to provide for ourselves. What area in life are you seeking provision for? What are you trying to make happen by yourself? What brings the sweat down on your brow and you work with a frenzy and say, if I can just work harder and be smarter and figure this out on my own, I'm sure I'll get it. Is it possible that you just need to rest and then wake up and do the right thing and then rest and then wake up and do the right thing and then rest? And in that moment of rest and not trying to make it all happen and rely on yourself, that is the very moment that God's going to provide in ways that you never saw coming. Notice he provides for Moses through other people. It's kind of a humbling thought if you look at your life and you think about the grace of God, the blessings of God. Majority of them come through other people, don't they? And if you look back in time, it's hard to see because now all the people in your past are familiar to you. But at one point in 2012, in 1999 or 1981, you didn't know that person that God was going to line up and bring into your life to bless you in a way that you never saw coming. You had no idea that she existed or he existed or that church existed or that group existed. And God did because he stands outside of time. What if we stop being so self-reliant and we just be reliant on God and we say, God, I know that you have a host of people lined up to come and provide the needs that I have, to grow me in ways I don't even know I need to be grown, to bless me when I need to be blessed, to partner with me, to move forward on the missions that you have put in my heart, the good plans you prepared in advance for me to do. And I don't know who they are, but I trust you're going to bring them into my life, and I'm going to be very receptive and open. When I sit at the well, I'm just going to be scanning for the next right thing to do, not on a strategy to manipulate things and people towards my end. Moses was sobered and humbled by epic failure. He hid the body. That didn't work. He started to run until he realized, where am I even running to? I don't even have a people. And it was only in that moment in the well where he just said, God, I guess it's up to you, that things started to turn around. He was given a people. He was given a son. He was given a legacy. And now he's given a job, and in chapter 3 of Exodus, we're seeing he's given the encounter he has been longing for since he was a little boy, ever since he heard that he is a Hebrew, and his own people are the slave labor force of the very empire he is a prince in. He's given a mission. Maybe today, as you catalog the failures of your life, as I catalog the failures of our life, we might look at a few and say, aha, that one. That one sprung forth from being overly self-reliant. And now I have a lesson to implement. I'm going to approach the next endeavor, the next season of my life being God-reliant. Self-forgetfulness is not thinking too high of yourself or too low of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less often. What would it look like if the men and women and children of Mercy Road became known for our self-forgetfulness? We just don't think of ourselves that much because we're so enamored with this good God who calls us into life, full life and mission with him. And we are so interested in the needs of other people. We're so curious about how we might be a blessing to other people, how we might partner with other people. Some of you, this would be such a relief. And as your pastor, I want this for you as much as anything. Because when you're not self-forgetful and you're always thinking of yourself, all sorts of things can come up. There are a lot of mental illnesses that we know from science, not all of them, but a lot of them, that crop up because we have an inordinate focus on ourself. We're beating ourselves up every day, or we're elevating ourselves and creating an unrealistic perception of how great we are, but the common denominator is self. So ironically, you can get this wrong. You can be self-reliant by being really, really down on yourself, and you're relying on yourself, even though you're beating yourself up. By God's grace, please stop. You can. Or you can be self-reliant by being really, really proud of yourself and having a higher estimation of what you bring to the table than you actually do. By God's grace, please stop. You can. We can help you. Oh, the freedom of humility. Oh, the freedom of self-forgetfulness. Oh, the freedom of reliance on the very one who sets enslaved peoples free, who teaches us how to fail forward. Next week, we're going to talk about the failure of entitlement. We're going to fast forward in the story all the way to chapter 15, where Moses is leading his own people out of the wilderness into the promised land, and there's this epic ballad about how God is powerful and he rescued them, but then a really sharp break occurs in chapter 15, and they just go into a cacophony of complaining and entitlement. And if there's ever been a society in human history that struggles with the failure and the sin of being overly entitled, it is us. It is Western Hemisphere America 2019. We do feel very entitled, and God wants to set us free from that. So I encourage you to join us. We're going to close with a worship, and Ari will give us a benediction. That just means good word. If you want prayer for any reason, there is a prayer chapel afterwards. You can come and pray quietly by yourself. You can ask someone who's a prayer minister in there to pray for you and with you. Know that if you're new, we'd love to get to know you. You can fill out a Connect card and request that a pastor or a staff member give you a call today. Wherever you are, may you be set free from the failures of self-reliance and fail forward into a God-reliance.